Hi Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great to be here.
Yeah, what's been your day?
It's good. Been positive, studying a lot, doing assignments, trying to like prep to get into my next course, my next year, one
Oh,
more year.
nice.
Trying to do that. How are you?
Oh, not bad, not bad. Actually doing well, passed my driving test today, so excited.
Let's go.
I was dancing in the building
You like that?
because I was so excited. I was so scared that I was going to fail.
Yeah.
I was like already encouraging myself with a Bible verse that Isaac dug another well. Like
Okay.
when Isaac was trying to dig a well and the Philistines covered it up. Then I was like, oh yeah, if I don't pass, I'm gonna dig again, try again.
I'll
I'm
pass
just
again.
opened it. It was like, oh congratulations. I was
Yeah.
like,
Was that the first time you said? That's
yeah,
good
that was
too.
my first time.
Took me two times.
For real?
Yeah, it took me two times to pass the theory, two times to pass the practical.
Yeah, because people were telling me that it's a lot and stuff, so I was
Yeah,
just
it's
like,
hot.
oh, okay.
You gotta like study like it's a game, you know? Like just
Yeah.
do like multiple different questions until like it just sticks in your head and you're like, oh, I know that. You know, especially with the like signs or like do you go down this way? Is this no entry? Can you go forward single lane only? Like kind of stuff.
It's just a
It's fun.
lot.
It was interesting though.
Yeah, but I'm just glad I passed it. I was so glad. I had the
So good,
exact
bro.
score I needed for 3/50, and I was like, yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. I was thinking of something. I was like, oh, what would I have done if I had 42? And I said, I guess we never know.
Yeah, we will
Oh,
never know.
yeah,
Passed. There you go. That's
passed
it.
it. Yeah. But what's been the most fun thing you did for yourself this week?
What's the most fun I've done this week? Probably. Oh, so I went for a run,
Oh.
but an outside run with my roommate,
Oh, nice.
Nathan. We went for a run outside in the streets, which was hard because
Okay.
it was my first time doing that in a good, I'd say, a year. Like I run in the gym on the treadmill. It's
Yeah.
easy. But like just the mental challenge and the physical challenge that it was just to like run on the streets is such a different game.
But I'm surprised why people do the run on the
Yeah.
streets while you can just do the run on the treadmill. What's the
Exactly. That
difference?
is so much easier. So much easier on the treadmill. It's
Yeah.
just nice smooth terrain. But
Yeah.
the streets is like really, really hard. We did a 3K
Wow.
and I did it in like 22 minutes and that's not good at all. It's just like,
Oh.
oh, really need to improve. But that's probably like the best thing I've done for myself, like mentally, recently, just for me. But on that, been doing a lot of the ministry stuff, and just like watching like people like come into Alpha like
Oh,
first time we
nice.
were. So just like that's just been like reviving my soul and just like seeing like God at work. So it's like so good.
What's Alpha all about?
Alpha is about a place where people can come
Yeah.
to explore the faith of Christianity. You don't
Yeah.
have to be a Christian to come along. You don't have to know Jesus. You can just be curious,
Yeah.
you know. And it's a place that you can come and ask it the deep questions of like who Jesus is, why do we believe what we believe? Can we trust the Bible? Can we not trust the Bible? And all these different aspects. Like you can ask that question, you know, without judgment
Yeah.
or like fear of like what's ever going on. And it's a good way for like people that don't like know church, that are not comfortable in that setting, to like walk in for the first time, because
Yeah.
it can be daunting. Just from my own experience, like
Yeah.
I remember the first time I walked in, thought I was gonna like burst into flames as I
Yeah.
walked in, and then just that wasn't the case, and just like people are so nice and friendly.
Yeah.
So it's just like a good place for like young people or anyone in general just to come along and yeah, learn about who God is, you know.
Yeah. So if you were to describe your faith journey in one word, what would you call it? The last person said trust.
My faith journey. That's hard. That's hard. And one
Oh,
word.
yeah, or in a song.
And a song. Oh. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
It as well. It
Yeah.
as well. Like regardless of like how I'm feeling, it as well. Like that song. That's probably it. And as well with myself, regardless of like circumstances, regardless of what I'm doing, what's
Yeah.
happening around me, how I'm feeling, like it as well.
Yeah.
I can be really, really happy,
Yeah.
which is great.
Yeah.
It's easy to trust in,
Yeah.
but like when you're like super negative, it as well, you know, it's gonna be okay. Like God's got us.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say that. Yeah, it's a good
How
one.
did you get to this point?
How do I get to this point?
Yeah, in your faith, like how did you get to this point?
Okay.
So you could like just tell us a story
All right.
of your transformation.
Yeah. Okay, so this is also the first time that you're hearing this as well.
Yeah.
So that this is interesting.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, so this is super good. So for me personally, I grew up Catholic,
Yeah.
and my family are all Catholic. I would say agnostic at this point as well. More just like they believe what they believe, yeah. but at the same time they've kind of lost interest. It's more cultural thing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the background I grew up in. I went to a Catholic school. So like my religion, like with God, is very much just like it was religion.
Yeah.
It wasn't like relationship with Jesus. Didn't really know who he was. It was just like routine, and it was just like what people did. And then coming to like a deeper understanding of like, yeah, like the world is the world. So I kind of lived in the world for a long period of time. And I myself, just like walking in the faith like more and more as the years went by. And then it got to the point where I was like 16 and I just stopped. I stopped going to church. I stopped believing in Jesus. I stopped believing in God entirely. And I became very like cynical. I started to drink a lot. I'm from like a council background, not well off at all. And then just like that type of background when like drinking at the exact same time, at the age of 16, and then very, very rapidly progressed into addiction. And yeah, just a lot of darkness.
Oh, okay, before you move into that part,
yeah.
What were the misconceptions that if looking back, you would say people always have about Jesus? What were the misconceptions you had like at your teenage years growing up? Yeah,
from my own background as growing up Catholic, I'd probably say it was it not being like a relationship.
Yeah,
because I thought it was someone like who's really far away.
Yeah,
where I would have to go to the saints, or I'd have to go to the angels, or I'd have to go to Mary, and I just couldn't go to Jesus.
Yeah,
and it felt like there was such a divide, there was such a gap.
Yeah.
So for me personally, my own experience growing up from that, for like being young, I just felt like there was just too much of a distance between me and God of like, why would you care about me? How would I care about you? How can I like come closer to you, you know?
Yeah.
So for me it was that.
But did you feel it was uncool to like due to the culture, peer pressure, did you feel it was uncool being a Christian that time?
Yeah. In Scotland there's very much of a divide of football.
Yeah.
So football comes in where you're like Celtic or Rangers, and just like that was like my warped view of like religion was to do with football. And that's just like the stereotypical coming up, growing up in like North Lancashire. It was very much like Celtic prone. And just like that background. So just like the understanding of just like my idea of God and religion was not from the Bible.
Yeah.
It's not from the Bible, it was from culture, it was from the world. It was from other people's opinions and perspectives. But it wasn't actually what the word was saying, you know? And then but only through like learning and reading the word have I
realized that. Yeah.
And so many people are living in that way right now in the world where they think that's what religion is, but when you read the Bible, it doesn't say that.
It's different.
It's completely different. So yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that does. So you can continue from when you're 16.
Oh yeah. So when I was like 16, I started drinking a lot. Just like started to like lose like who I was personally. I started to go out and just like have fun and party. And then by the age of 21, fast forwarding a couple of years, completely a rock bottom, completely just like struggling, lost, was in a really like, I don't know, I'd say a very dark place. I tried to commit suicide a few times, which is so counterproductive in life, because you want
What led you to that point?
So that's what I'm talking about. Okay. So it's like so counterproductive in that sense, because man, like Jesus lives in you. Like your life isn't yours.
Yeah.
You know, but this, again, not the awareness of that. I didn't have it. But yeah, when I was 18, I first tried to take my life by overdosing. And thankfully survived. Would take drugs and alcohol at the same time in the mix. And then got my stomach pumped and, you know, was fine. Got released. And then
did someone like run into the room to get you?
So like when it comes to like that type of stuff, it's like it's deeper.
Yeah.
Because so I try to take my life like at least 5-6 times. So this is like trying to like piece them, because they kind of blur it. Just because of like how much chaos goes on. So
you're
also like from studying to be a therapist, so like your coping mechanisms as your brain is like like push it down as far as possible so you can't remember it, because it's self-defense that you're trying to like not remember the bad things. But I'll try.
I'm coming. So like, so that people listening to this can also help other people. So what do you think, how would we recognize someone probably struggling with like a proper suicidal thoughts, and we could help them, or how do you think how can we help people? So like, you're studying to be a therapist now with your knowledge, like what would you say people can do to just help people just make better decisions, whether unconsciously or consciously? So like, let's say I'm in a class and someone beside me might be thinking of just taking their life, and I don't know, like probably a simple act I can make can probably like just transform the person's story and just take the person out of that.
It's very challenging as a whole, because that person that is thinking that way is probably looking normal and fine on the outside. So you like,
you never know.
You never know. That's it. You don't know what's going on in someone else's life. Like, we're currently in the university and there's like 30, 40 people surrounding us right now. You have no idea what these people are thinking.
Yeah.
Like, they could be in like the happiest place situation of their life, or they could be the most depressed.
Yeah.
So, but when it comes to like, what can we do as people? It's treat everyone with kindness. Yeah. Because like, what does the Bible say? It's like, if you don't have love, you have nothing.
Yeah.
So like, that's it. Walk in love with every single person you come in contact with. Like, show kindness, show a smile as you're walking by someone in the street, because those small like interactions, even if it's just like a stranger just smiling at you as you walk by for like a brief second, like that can bring some validation to you, and you feel like, oh no, actually the world isn't, you know, a terrible place.
Yeah, but sometimes, like me personally, I get confused. At times, like some people you would want to be like so kind to them, and sometimes you feel like, oh, these people will be like, you're probably being sympathetic to them, and they don't like people being sympathetic to them. So how do you handle that?
So like, when people feel that you're feeling sorry for them.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. For that.
So when it's like, when it comes to that aspect, it, again, case by case person, like situation, because everyone's different. But from my own experience of like working with younger people in recovery, they have to like come to a place where they want to accept help.
Yeah.
Or they want to like talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you can't make someone do it if they're not ready.
Yeah.
So when it comes to like you, and like when you're like talking to someone and trying to show compassion and empathy without feeling like completely like, I know what's going on in your life, that's the one thing that we are taught as a therapist, is you don't actually know what's going on in someone else's life, because you're not that person. You can try your best to put yourself in their shoes, but don't try to understand that that you have the answer to their situation. It might seem like you do, it might be like the best interest, but the only person that really knows what they need to do is that person.
Yeah.
For themselves, because they know the situation, they know exactly what's happening, they understand the thoughts and feelings for sure. But as bystanders to someone else's life, we just walk with love, show empathy, compassion, and just like the ability to listen, you know. That's the quick thing, is not to speak, but to listen to like someone. Just ask a question, an open question, not a yes or no, not a closed question, just ask an open question. And then see if they are willing to engage, you know. And it's just like being that polite, friendly person in the first place, and then that would hopefully give the signal that you're not being like feeling sorry for them, that you're actually being willing to listen and open, and you genuinely care about them, you're curious about their life, you know. And that's it's hard to do, hard to master, but it's just like being friendly, and it also helps if you know the person. That's the key part.
So back to when you were 18.
So trying to take my life by overdosing on cocaine and sleeping medication and alcohol. I was in a really dark place. I was confused with life and what that looked like and what was happening. And I was suffering from depression and anxiety. And I felt really lost and alone at that point. And then continued to keep doing that. And then at the age of 19, I threw myself off a 3-story balcony. Head first. Good times. I love the facial reaction. I wish everyone could see this right now. So at the age of 19.
How did you, like, You chew yourself down. Three.
Yeah. It's terrifying. But my biggest regret was the second my hand left the banister, I was just like free falling, and I'm just like, oh, great. Yeah.
You survived it.
Yeah, so I landed on like the back of my back, and then yeah, just completely winded. Like, I didn't break anything, but it was bruised and like sore. But like, yeah, I landed on like the upper back. It's like near my neck, kidding. Yeah. So I was like completely winded. But like, if I land any further, I'm landing on my neck. Yeah. You know? So I just managed to like roll a little bit further to land on my back instead of my head. So that was just like, yeah, crazy. And then yeah, was miraculously survived that. But all these attempts had been when I was under the influence of alcohol. So I just kind of like, alcohol's like a numbing agent, man. You wake up and then you like, you bounce up and you're just good to go. And then you just keep going. And then I just kept walking down the street drunk, not completely unoblivious to what just happened, what occurred, which is crazy, you know. And then yeah, loving this reaction, but you've worked silent. That's how most people react.
Yeah.
It's like, what do I say to that? Yeah. And then yeah, I also, again, I used to self-harm a lot as well. That's why I have tattoos on both my forearms. People can't see, but it's just covered with Jesus. But I have it simply so it covers my scars, so I can't see them. And yeah, it's just like, it's a good reminder. If I'm going to cover it with anything, why not cover it with the face of the man that saved me? And then yeah, a few other times as well, overdose again, all this type of stuff, cutting, all that type of stuff, which is demonic, 100% demonic. And just, yeah, the work of the enemy, like, it's not my life to give up, you know, like God lives within me, you know, so, and he created me for a higher purpose. So it's incredibly, in my opinion, selfish of me to like even think of that. It's just something on my family aspect as well. But yeah, I then came to...
What were you with your family at this point, like at your teenage years?
Yeah, so I moved out from my mum and dad's house when I was 19. So I moved into my grandparents' house.
But did you talk to them like while you're going through all this?
Yes and no. Like my family like absolutely did their best. But the thing is with addiction, you can't do it for the person. So they are sitting there powerless, like absolutely powerless. They were making sure I was going to addiction counselors, and then from the addiction counselors they referred me to a psychologist. And then from a psychologist, you're going to a psychiatrist. So then I went to all three of them. So an addiction counselor can recommend medication. A psychologist can give you medication. And a psychologist can give you medication. And a psychiatrist can lock you up. And that's the progression that I was going. And that's my family's aspect of trying to get me help, take me to places, take me to my like my sessions to like understand what was going on. And as a therapist, like now myself, like training to do that, just understanding in a deeper way just how challenging that can be for someone to go through those stages, and actually having the first-hand experience of doing it, and now actually like seeing other people do it, super like rewarding, but also super sobering to know that just like my family, just like my parents, you're completely powerless. The only person that can actually do something is Jesus. Speaking to that, like I'm gonna die on that hill. My family think I done it, like got sober. It's just not the case. It's like I'd like the second I had to surrender, I had to give up everything to gain everything. And that's why I did it. 21. Went to all the different therapy sessions, all the different people, was on different medications, anti-abuse, which is it helps you come off alcohol, so it like helps the cravings. And yeah, by the age of 21, I'm drinking every single day at this point, like every single day. I'm hiding it from, or at least I'm thinking I'm hiding it. I think I'm being clever, but they know what's going on. But they are just like, we can't kick him out. We don't want him to be homeless. So if it wasn't for my family, I would have definitely been homeless. And then, yeah, nah, I was going back and forth from just the scenario of drinking every day, causing havoc, feeling suicidal, constantly having suicidal thoughts with suicidal idealization. And then just, yeah, processing what that meant, you know. And what did that mean? It meant I was feeling lost, that I had no purpose. I was feeling sorry for myself, which a lot of it is, you just feel sorry for yourself that you're not worthy of anything. And then, yeah, by the age of 21, after all these attempts on my life, after all this self-destructive behavior, and after all this negativity towards myself and towards people that I came into contact with, just there comes a moment where you are like, okay, I'm going to commit suicide properly, and I'm going to like complete, it's called completion suicide. I think, yeah, something like that. Don't quote me on that. I should know that. It's probably going to come up in one of my tests. But yeah. Yeah, so just by the age of 21, on December 7th, 2019, I woke up at 10 a.m. I went out with one of my friends at the time, and we went from like, I think it was like 12 p.m. till like 7 p.m. We went to different bars every single day. Like every single hour, we get a drink, go to a different bar, go to a drink, get a drink.
Did you tell him?
No, I did not tell him. But he kind of drank like I did, but he's not an alcoholic. But we were like drinking. And then we went to different bars. And then by the time I got to 7 p.m., he was going to go meet up with my old friend group, who no longer spoke to me anymore because my behavior was absolutely like shocking. Again, like, who wants to be around the person that all he does is really drink? You know, it's not. I understand completely because like I didn't want to be around myself. Why would other people want to be around me? You know. So yeah, when I got to that bar where he met up with all my his friends, but my ex friends at that time, and then I sat at the booth, thinking I belonged when I didn't, and I was unwelcomed. And I just, yeah, my other old friend just looked at me and was like, look at the state of you, like, what has become of you? Like, and it was the most sobering moment in my life where I just like, what has happened to me? You know, this is December 7th, 2019. And I'm just like, I am so just lost, broken, desperate, sad, you know? And then I went home that night, went to my bed, woke up on December 8th, and at that point, I'm just done, completely done. Tried to do it before, suicide came to life, and then I walked to the M8 motorway, and there's a big bridge that you can go on, and there's 18-wheelers that go down, like big trucks, and I'm like, that fall can definitely kill me, but like, if I jump in front of an 18-wheeler, this time I'll definitely die. And this is the first time I've ever tried to do it sober. So any other time that I tried to do it, I was under the influence of some drugs, some alcohol, like substance, whatever. It's always, it was mainly alcohol. But then I got to the M8 and I was standing there and I was like crying, sobbing, like uncontrollable, like crying. But I'm like sober, but like I'm like detoxing at the exact same time. And I'm just crying. I'm just like lost and I'm so confused. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but something needs to change. And I just remembered like sitting on the bridge and I just cried out to God. And I was just like, God, I don't know if you're real. I don't know what's going on here, but I can't do this myself. Because I was going to a fellowship for recovery, but I was only in and out of it briefly because they kept telling me I needed God in my life. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. I don't believe in God. Why would I do that? And then I just remember this old timer, and we called him. And he was just like, you need God in your life, kid. And I was just like, and it's always stuck with me. And so at that moment, at rock bottom, I just completely, and I've hit rock bottom many times before, but this one felt like I hit bedrock, you know, like completely, like we're at the bottom. And I was just like, I just called out and I was like, God, I don't know if you're real, but I actually, like, I can't do this. Something needs to change. I'm going to die. I'm 21. I need to change. Something has to happen. And then from that moment on till this very day, which I'll go into as well, I've not drank since, and that's 5 years ago. We're currently, what date is it? It's currently the 16th of January.
I'm trying not to cry.
Yeah, so that's 5 years, 1 month, and like 1 week of like being, is it not? Yeah, and it's 1 month and 1 week of being sober. So like God has saved me from that. So I tried to stop drinking for 2 years on my own. Couldn't do it. With doctors, with psychiatrists, with psychologists, addiction counselors, medication, all that, couldn't do it. And then the second I just like completely surrendered to God, and I'm like, dude, I can't do this. I'm in too much pain. And then the salvation comes, you know? But the thing is, you can experience a miracle, but not understand what that miracle is. And that's the thing. So I didn't have the information of the Bible, didn't have the information of what happened. I just knew all of a sudden I'm sober. And I've like, something's happening. I don't know what's happening. And I went back to a recovery this time, the recovery fellowship that I went to. And yeah, they took me through the program and they explained what God was to me and or a God of my own understanding. And I called out to the God of my childhood. And the God of my childhood is Jesus. But I had a resentment against Jesus because I blamed God for my circumstances in the first place. That why has this happened? Why did bad things happen? You know, and I was very resentful towards God. And then after that period of time of going through the program, slowly my heart became unhardened to the idea of the concept of God. Like the person that took me through, we call them sponsors, was a Christian and has been a Christian for like 11 years. So he would always just, he would never talk about like Christianity in the sense of like he's like preaching to me, but he was always like dropping of just his experience. He would never say like the Bible says this. He would say, oh, my experience, this has happened. And that was the best way to approach it with me, is because if he came from a front of like preaching at me, I would instantly like turn my back. I like order, put my guard up to like instantly fit against it. But he worded it beautifully. And he talked about his own experience and he opened up to me about things that have happened in his past, which made me more comfortable to do the exact same with myself. And then through that, I found freedom of just like talking about it and speaking about it and praying on it and giving it to God. And then, yeah, two, three years into recovery, I'm not going to church. I'm not doing anything like that. I'm praying, but not hardly. I'm sober, but I'm like still miserable, but not in the sense of like everything's falling apart. Like I'm doing stuff now. I'm able to do stuff, but like just still kind of miserable. And then, yeah, 2 years ago, I walked into Rehope West End with the person that took me through the program, because I was like, dude, I want to go to church. And I saw this church. I was walking, I can't remember where I was walking, but I saw like a poster banner thing, and I was just like, it said Rehope, and I was just like, okay, I'm going to go do that. And I literally was like, like the guy's name's Fraser, and I was like, Fraser, can you hold my hand as I walk through this building? Because I thought I was going to burst into flames as I walk in here, because I was like, oh, I'm so just unholy, unrighteous, not worthy to be here. And I walked in, and it was just the most blissful experience of my life, in the sense of just, there was a sense of peace and calm. I was nervous, I was shaking, just from like the genuine like fear of what's going on, new people, like being in a weird environment, and having misconceptions about God and what church is, which I found super, super interesting, of how my mind has like been wired to like think how I used to think, and how preconceived ideas of what my family thought and other people and culture dictated what I thought like religion was going to be or church was going to be like. And I walked in and it was completely different. There was guitars, there were people with drums, and like this, like it's completely different to like Catholicism. Rehope is an evangelical church for those listening. And yeah, just like completely different to what I grew up on. And I just walked in and I just like, yeah, felt like really calm to be there after a period of time. And then, yeah, just became curious. That was the part. It started when I became curious, because I had this experience of God changing and stepping in to save my life. But now I'm trying to learn, okay, who are you, God? What are you actually? You know, I'd had this experience of God, so I'm so convinced you're real, and I'm so convinced this is real. Like this is real. The word, the truth, I believe it. But it's now trying to understand who you are. Like, what does the Bible say you are compared to what does the world say you are? You know, and then I proceeded to ask Mr. Stuart Long, who was the youth young adults pastor at the time. Who is no longer there. He now went back to America. He came here as a missionary with his wife, which is awesome. And his two kids, got to give them a shout out as well. And then, yeah, just like asked him questions all the time. We'd get a coffee every week and I'd be like, the most deep questions possible. Like, why do bad things happen? What does the Bible say on homosexuality? What does God say about murder? Sex before marriage, like all the hard-hitting questions. Like this man was like, oh, okay, like he was looking forward to Tuesdays because it like really like it tested him, just like to have the preparedness of just like leaning in with the Holy Spirit to give like the answers, because you know he's not God, but he can do his best, to like help me and like, facilitate that. And then he also ran the internship called Remain, and I, who your last guest Oliver, he also did it as well, but yeah, like he said, oh, you should totally do Remain. You should totally do Remain. And I didn't really know what Remain was. But Remain is basically just, you do a class every Wednesday night, and you learn about God, and you learn about God's character, and you learn about all the practical sides, and what does it look like to be an evangelist, and what does it look like to be a teacher, and all these different, the gifts of the Spirit, and so many numerous different topics. And then through that learning of that year, and serving every Sunday, I just grew significantly in my faith, and I learned who God's character was, and I learned how do I speak to God, how do I listen to God, how do I read my Bible, how do I make it make sense, you know. And that's the like key aspect of like my first year as a Christian, truly like turned around. Still sin is living, is actively living in my life at this point, as it probably always will be, but like fully not trying to do anything about it. And then, yeah, just like that realization of, wow, I am like so just, yeah, so lost. Because at this point, I'm now in church, but I'm living outside of church, and I'm a completely different person. So it's two different people when I'm there. And then through that transition of like slowly like learning God, building up your relationship with Jesus, like personal relationship is probably like the key aspect to like transforming your mind and renewing your mind. Not changing, because I believe that God has like made you the person that he wants you to be. But we have our part to play and what we do and how we meet him halfway. He's not gonna do it entirely for you. Like he so can, but like we're not gonna learn anything. So yeah, just like learning, I need to like really lean in on Remain, and then just like have a heart to listen, you know, have a heart to listen to what other people are saying, and then through doing so, and then through surrender again, within 4 years of recovery, I actually find myself now where I currently am presently, in a really good position with my faith, and just like what that like looks like, and just how much I'm involved in my church, which is awesome, because that's just like the transformation has happened and is taking place. And that's just like from death to life. Like believing in God or going to this is not a game for me. It's not a choice. It's not is God real or isn't he, or I could just go to church on Sunday and then miss next week and then I'll go with the other week and then I'll miss it again. I can't do that because like it is my lifeline. Like God is my lifeline. If I don't have that, I lose everything. If I don't have him, I fear that I may drink again or do something else. And like so like it's not an option. He's not an option. He is. Like he's my life, my world. That surrenders to him completely. And then just being in that state of like submission almost. Of just like, yeah, leaning on God, leaning on his understanding and not mine, which is like key, because my understanding gets me in trouble all the time. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a long story, but like, yeah, from death to life, man. Like just the transition of discovering who I am by discovering who Jesus is, because through Jesus I'm made free. Through Jesus on the cross dying for me, resurrecting and coming back, through him I have new life. I have a new understanding of the world. My life is not my own, you know. And yeah, just walk in love, you know. If you don't have love, you have nothing. So I try to like walk in love all the time, you know, and not to like judge, because I feel like that's, as human beings, we're quick to judge. We're quick to judge. We're quick to make an opinion of someone, and that's probably like my thing. I tried to do the least is not to make an opinion of someone. Something because I know what it's like. Because when you are the person that is creating the most havoc and chaos, you're quite likely to be judged. So I'm very like compassionate towards people now. And yeah, now I'm training to be a therapist, and I have another year year and a half, and then I am qualified. And then my goal is to work as an addictions counselor in a rehab center for a Christian charity, hopefully. And that will be my ministry. So, full circle, man. I was like, from death to life to God, like changing everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a powerful story. I was trying to like hold back my tears and just not cry.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's a lot.
A lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
My family are grateful for it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing. Like, my family don't really believe in God, but they know there's something because they
yeah, I'm sure they couldn't understand.
They're like, how, we can't see the how.
How?
It's like, how? Like, where you were, to what you were, to what you did, to how did you survive?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah.
I'm sure at the point they could have been like, oh, are the drugs working? And they were like, no, it couldn't have been the drugs.
Yeah, no. So, actually, speaking of, like, the drugs, actually, keep our, like, for, like, when I was detoxing, like, first 3 days, painful, absolute agony. That is the most excruciating thing I've ever experienced. And just, like, the transition of, like, from watching like my family like come in and out of like my room to like see how I'm doing, and then just like see how I'm actually able to like get through. Because I do not recommend detoxing from alcohol without being actually under the correct care, as in nurses and doctors, or speaking to your doctor beforehand. I just did it because I was like, nah, like Jesus is like, I've done this, I'm committed. And yeah, just like that transition of like that period. Because they saw how much pain I was in, but yeah, I was still like refusing to do it, and it wasn't willpower at all, because willpower is futile, because it doesn't last. But just like there was a power coming from me where I was like able to like not do it. So yeah, when you're talking about my family, so that was another tangent. I just went, so much is being unlocked.
What do you think people like misunderstand about the Christian journey, especially in today's society?
That it's for the broken. I would feel like that from the outsider perspective, even here in my testimony, my story, you would think, oh, that's good. I'm glad that works for you, but it doesn't work for me. I'm in a good place. I don't need that. That's not true. Like, the Christian perspective is like, everyone needs God. Everyone. Like, just my differences in this day and age is I was like struggling. So I needed God in a more practical sense, but we all need God. So it's probably the concept that church is filled with either the place for the broken, or it is a place of like happy, smiley people, which is just not the case, because it is for those who are flawed, you know, and that's the world. So yeah, just understanding that there is more to it than meets the eye, you know. Don't let culture dictate what it is. Find out for yourself, explore for yourself. That's it. Don't take other people's opinion. Don't take my opinion for it. Like, you see for yourself, you know?
Yeah. Well, in a world driven by instant gratification, how do you think, like, faith stays relevant, and how did you stay grounded personally?
Yeah. Okay. So we're picking up our own cross right here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because to deny yourself is hard.
Yeah.
Because everything in my body, everything in my flesh says, do this. And then you will reap some kind of benefit, whether that be financially, whether that be career-wise, whether that be sexually, whether that be relationship-wise or friendship-wise, whatever it is. You are looking for instant gratification of something that is fleeting, because anything that you do, money-wise, car-wise, fun-wise, ends. It's temporary. It's coming and it's going. It comes as fast as it goes, you know. And yeah, just like leaning on God in that time is the most thing, because he's the one that doesn't leave. He's the one that's there all the time. He's the one that continues to be there and moving your life. And it's the one thing, it's free. It's free. But yeah, the question is like, how do I do that? And it's just, it's simple. It's bring it to back to basics. Because understanding a higher purpose, like you're called for a higher purpose. But again, trying to explain that to someone that doesn't know their purpose, doesn't know their identity, know that they are free, know that they can be free if they choose to do so. Because yes, we are free in Christ, but like at the same time, like you can still keep yourself very much captive because you don't know who you are. you know, you don't know the true freedom of that, you know. So, and like strongholds and all that as well. So I don't know. I would say just definitely like, yeah, just leaning on God in that sense. You know, it's hard to carry your own cross.
Yeah. You know, as I said before we started, it just keeps getting better.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah. It just keeps getting better. Because, like, listening to your story, just... I was just thankful for God, for just being God, man.
Yeah, man. Just being Him.
Like, just at that point on that bridge. Wow.
It's dark. But it's also light, you know?
Yeah.
It's a sad story, but it's a good story.
Yeah.
Because it's a happy ending, you know?
Yeah, very good happy ending.
That's the best. That's the blessing of it. Like, yeah. It's a blessing, old man.
Yeah. So, like, well, what would you say if you had anything else to say, like, to people?
What would
I rather say? Broken, lost, trying to find Christ, trying to just be happy, already just being glad or happy. What would you say?
It's very short and sweet.
Yeah.
You've tried it your way.
Yeah.
And you still feel the same.
Yeah.
Why not surrender?
Yeah.
Surrender to Jesus.
Yeah.
As simple as that. You spent your whole entire life, how many years that is, trying to do it yourself. Try to do it your way.
Yeah.
And you still feel that bitterness, that loneliness, that like something's missing.
Yeah.
You're feeling that longing.
Yeah.
Because I felt that longing.
Yeah.
That longing is for God.
Yeah.
Because you are supposed to be with Him. So why not meet Him halfway? If He'll call to you, He'll call to you to come to His Son. But like you need to, yeah, meet Him there, you know? You tried it your way, did it work?
No.
Then try it his way.
Yeah.
You know? That's my main thing. So I tell other people.
Okay, I'm listening to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're about to say something.
Huh?
You're about to say something.
No.
Okay. So what if someone right now, I'm just being led to say this, what if someone right now is listening to this and it's like, okay, I want to surrender. Would you mind just leading the person like prayers of surrender right now?
Sorry, pray.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Heavenly Father, to whoever is listening to this, Lord, and is just feeling like lost, alone, that maybe everything that they've been trying to do, Lord, is not working, or they're trying to gain your love, Lord, by works, which is not what we do, Lord. We gain your works by faith, and believing what you have done is enough, that you have paid for it, Lord, that you paid for everyone's sin on the cross, Lord, that you paid for every single thing that has ever happened, that ever will happen, Lord, that everything is entirely in your control. And yeah, Lord, I just pray for whoever is listening to this, Lord, and is feeling lost and alone, sad, suicidal, maybe struggling with addiction, Lord, maybe similar to my story, completely the opposite, Lord, where they have a different testimony, Lord. But we just pray that each person would just close their eyes, and then just repeat after me. Lord Jesus, I surrender my life entirely to you. Father, I don't know how much I believe. I don't know where to begin. But I choose to trust you. I choose to believe. I choose to have a small amount of faith. And from that, I choose to build. So, Father, I pray that you would speak to these people, Lord, that you would minister to them, that they would have an understanding of you, Lord, that their concept of who you are would just be so obvious. I pray that you would show them signs, that they would see you at work, Lord, not in a sense of proving that you are real, Lord, but just so that they can have that moment of, yeah, no, you are here, that your spirit is here, that you are moving, that you are alive. So Father, I just pray that you would shape people's lives. And Lord, if anyone is going through anything that they feel is hopeless or is entirely just isolating, Father, I just pray that you would give them peace within their soul, peace within their mind, and peace within their heart, Lord. I just pray that they would just have an understanding of hope and joy and what those words mean and where they can find them, Lord, and they can find them in you. So Father, I pray against any anxiety, against any depression, against any hardship, against any isolation, against any loneliness, against any addiction, against any strongholds, Lord, that may be there, against every single lie that the person may be believing about themselves that is just not true.
pray against it in your name, Jesus. So, Father, I pray that you would come and that you would accept this person's surrender and that they would accept you as Christ, they would accept you as King, they would accept you as Lord, and they would just trust in you, Lord, and nothing else. They would not rely on their own understanding, Lord, but they would rely on yours. So, Father, I just pray for whoever's here listening to this, and I just pray that they would have a miracle, Lord, have contact with you, come into your presence. So, Lord Jesus, come and have your way. Amen.
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 Oh, thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome, bro.
Yeah, it was a good time. Very good. Thank you so much.